You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
It is the third and final hour of Miller and Moulton, at least along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour is an hour away for our loyal audience in the 239. We are Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Talking the madness and talking Ohtani and this little gambling situation that he finds himself in. What, if anything, did he have to do with it? He will speak to the media this afternoon. Major League Baseball certainly wants him to get ahead of this because they want to be able to focus on their season. Right now, the only thing anybody's talking about in the sport is Ohtani and his interpreter, former interpreter, and $4.5 million in gambling debts. Who knew what, when, whose debts were they, who paid them off?
And most importantly, what was he betting on?
Right. But the madness doesn't have a Cinderella. I mean, Mark, that's my take. Do you believe North Carolina State, an 11 seed, but a team from the ACC, at this point in time, qualifies as a Cinderella?
They are one game away from qualifying as a Cinderella. They need to beat Marquette. They beat Marquette, then they can don the slipper and call themselves Cinderella. But at this point, David, I'm with you. They beat Texas Tech and Oakland. Oakland was the Cinderella.
Thank you. And so we contend there is no Cinderella left in the tournament. Does that affect your enjoyment of the tournament going forward?
Immensely. I am so fired up. This is the best tournament we've had in a long damn time.
This is as close to a Mark Miller bracket as the tournament could be, because remember, he had all top 16 seeds advancing to the Sweet 16, and I'll be damned if 12 of them aren't there, including all four ones and all four twos, and that's only happened four other times. What do we have, two fives, a six, and an 11?
Yes.
Boy, it's just been
bat
wild.
Blank crazy.
Round one was, all right, three 11s, two 12s, a 13, and a 14.
It's exactly what you want for the tournament. By the way, numbers were through the roof. Through the roof.
Yeah. That's the only thing I've gotten right about the tournament before it started. I said, we're going to have a crazy first week, and we're going to have a lot of chalk week two. And yeah, Mark, this just in. We watch live sports in this country when there's consequences. You know, win or go home.
I will say, if Kim Mulkey can keep doing pressers, it will draw more interest to the women's game as well.
Well, the women's tourney needs Kim Mulkey and LSU to win one more game. I know most people don't pay attention to the women's bracket, but LSU's through to the Sweet 16, right? Or no, they play tonight, or are they through? They're through. They whacked Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, they beat the one team that, right, the one upset of the round of 64, right, they played that team and pounded them.
Right. But they're going to play UCLA in the Sweet 16. UCLA is every bit as good as LSU and is actually seeded better. Now, if they beat UCLA, in all likelihood, they're going to play Caitlin Clark in Iowa. You know, if you're the women's tournament, that's what you need. Because then either Kim Mulkey and Angel Reese and LSU are advancing to the Final Four to try to defend their national title, or Caitlin Clark in Iowa is advancing to the Final Four.
And Kim Mulkey hates the media now. Everyone in it. Not just the person who's doing the quote-unquote hit piece on her. She said out loud, this is why I don't trust the media anymore.
Right. Right. And I will say, she's not alone. In fact, she may be in the majority on all sides.
But obviously Ohtani talking today, I can't wait to see how this goes. Because there's part of me that wonders how many questions he's going to take, David. I mean, when you open up yourself for questions, doesn't that mean until the questions are done? And the questions are going to get uncomfortable.
Well, they should, but, you know, listen, there are many times that sports talk show hosts are much tougher interviewers than reporters. I know we don't qualify as reporters. We don't qualify under the journalist umbrella. Now, I was in the news media for 20 plus years, you know, and we do a show in which we're not hot take guys and we don't like to be inaccurate. So we try to get as close to fitting under that umbrella as possible, but we don't qualify. But Mark, I am absolutely convinced you and I would ask harder, better questions today than the MLB media that's going to be out there. Even though there's three or five guys out there who are excellent, but you only get to ask really one question per person. Jeff Passan can't ask seven questions.
Yeah, they're not big on follow-ups in these pressers.
No. No. Also, how hard of a questioning do you think he's going to get from the Dodgers beat writers? They got to cover this guy for the rest of their careers. Are they really going to rail on him right now? I mean, I don't think so. I think there's a better chance. Probably, I would guess, the toughest questions are going to come from either a columnist who just doesn't care. My job is or B, from a national baseball writer.
Well, a national baseball writer, or David, this is right on the edge of jumping to mainstream news. Will the LA Times send out a reporter, if you know what I mean?
Well, considering they don't cover sports anymore, I hope they do. But I'm bum.
Well done. But you know what I mean. Will a paper, will CBS News send someone? Will a national news person be on this story?
They should be. They should be. You don't think this isn't worth 20 seconds of the evening news?
I mean, there are so many unknowns just with the interpreter.
Right.
So, I mean, I think this, you know, we've talked a long time, David, about how the gambling case, before it came close to going to the Supreme Court, which it still hasn't, we thought it was a year and a half ago. We're like, this is going to end up on the Supreme Court. Well, to me, this story, if you're running a news organization, has all of the necessary juice to play this for a little while.
It's difficult to imagine this day and age that the truth won't come out. Also, in theory, I mean, now I know, you know, everybody believes in conspiracy theories and cover-ups and the whole deal. And you could argue with the fact that Ohtani and the Dodgers want a criminal investigation, and there's apparently already one underway. See, that's the other thing that concerns me about today. How many times are we going to get, I'd like to answer that, but since there's an investigation already underway, ... which of course then gets an unbelievably rude, snarky reply from me very early in the press conference. Because that's when I stand up and say very loudly, then what the hell did you call a press conference for if you're not going to answer any questions?
Well, David, I think you really hit on something there. If I put the over-under at 6.5 times that said,
over. And I think the only way it's not over is if he takes a very limited number of questions. But he sought out the media yesterday. He sought them out and said, I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. And everybody went, okay. And I will say that gives news organizations all over the country 24 hours notice to get there in some way, shape, or form.
And I don't know how hard the Japanese media will be. He's a super, but no, I mean,
You're right. Hard. How hard will they be? Probably not at all. In fact, I don't know how many questions they'll ask. But it'll be aired live in Japan. I don't know what the time difference is, but...
I'm just excited to find out who the new interpreter is. Who's the new guy? Let's ask him a couple questions.
Do you gamble, sir?
Yeah, are you a gambler? What's your favorite bet? You got a bet for tonight? What's your lock?
Have you heard of a boost?
Listen, Ohtani, just one final question. Over-under on the Dodgers this year is 101.5. What do you think? Would that be out of line? No? That'd be funny.
Well, if they have Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel there, he might ask that question.
That's funny. Oh, boy. So, but, I mean, listen, I'd be pounding the table if I worked for one of, you know, Fox, MSNBC, CNN. I'd be like, listen, everything that's going on in the world right now, we get it. We know what side everybody's on. Run this presser for 20 minutes. I don't know. This is a story. I gotta run this. Like, we really need to see or hear from Andrea Mitchell anymore about the Middle East. I think we know what she thinks. Put Ohtani on.
So I want to see how hard the questions are. I want to see how many questions he actually answers. And they're going to throw this interpreter under the bus in ways that you cannot imagine.
Oh, my goodness. A rat.
Uh-huh.
You know what?
You got that right.
This is gonna be like, wait a minute. I thought it was your buddy.
Well, that's first the part. If they bury him, it makes Ohtani look stupid.
Uh-huh. That's right. So let me get this. So he stole the money from you. So I just want to make sure. You trusted him enough that he had access to your money. And he stole nearly $5 million from you and you didn't notice?
Until last week? When he talked to ESPN?
But apparently your pregame routine is meticulous and you can't waver from it. Just making sure. Not that one has to have something to do with the other, but...
When you go to the ATM and take $200 out, do you look at the balance?
No. That could be a poll question right there. Are you just so happy that they go, oh, yeah, you got the money. You're good.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Past the hour, Shane McNichol to talk the madness coming up in about 15 minutes time. The Diamond District bonus hour is about 40 minutes away. All right, back to the madness. First off, it's our poll question. How'd you word it again?
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, then why don't you have it up? Why don't you have it ready?
Without
buddy?
A true Cinderella, do you lose interest in the tournament? And for the very few people that have voted, 72% of them say no way.
You know, I probably should have retweeted it, shouldn't I?
Oh. No wonder you don't know what the question was because you didn't bother to repost it.
I might lose my status as a buddy if I keep this up.
No, you're still a buddy.
Okay.
That comes from Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter. They're buddies.
Right. Well,
how much money would you give your buddy to pay off a gambling debt?
If you had Ohtani money, you know, how much money is a buddy basically worth? How much would you cover? So back to the madness. Everybody, the Big East is 6-0. Well, yeah, the 1 seed, a 2 seed, and a 3 seed, they're supposed to be 6-0. So during a couple of the commercial breaks, I've done some research. The ACC is 8-1. Now, since most of us thought Virginia shouldn't have been in the tournament, I gave them a loss in terms of what should the ACC's record be at the Sweet 16. Mark, of the 5 teams they had in, the record that I have for the ACC is 5-3. Virginia was supposed to lose. Clemson was supposed to win their first round game by seeding, lose their second round game, and NC State was supposed to lose right away.
Correct.
Then Carolina, Duke go 4-0. You added up, they're 5-3. So they have clearly overachieved. They're 8-1. They're supposed to have two teams in the Sweet 16. They've got four. So you could argue, even though the Big East is 6-0, and I'm a Big East guy, but, I mean, the conference right now that's winning the tournament is the ACC.
Absolutely, because the Big East has, what, a 1, a 2, and a 3 in the tournament, right?
Right.
It's the highest Creighton's ever been, is a 3.
So now, I mean, Creighton was fortunate. Creighton should have lost. There's no doubt about that. But they didn't. And that's the beauty of the madness. We can all circle teams that have won the title in which you're like, yeah, they should have lost in the second round. Nobody more famous than Jim Valvano's 83 NC State team. No three-point shot. They're down 6 to Jim Herrick's Pepperdine team with like 35 seconds to go in the game, and Pepperdine's got the ball. And NC State won in overtime. Dot, dot, dot. But the Pac-12, 6-3. By seeding, I think they're supposed to be 3-3. So they've overachieved. But they also have the one team still playing this week that was supposed to be playing. And that's Arizona.
Right.
Right. So now the Big Ten was supposed to be 7-3. They're 6-4. You know, I mean, but they were supposed to have Illinois and Purdue get to the Sweet 16. They're through to the Sweet 16. So the Big Ten, you know, Wisconsin's really the only, because they, you know, they won an 8-9 game, they lost an 8-9 game, you know, with Nebraska and Michigan State, so whatever. But Wisconsin's the team here. They got beaten a 5-12. That's really the one in which you go, yeah, that's really the only team that let us down here if you're a Big Ten guy.
And by the way, the Big Ten was dismal last year in the tournament. So it is a nice little bounce back for the Big Ten this year. I will say, having Purdue actually win a game and not losing the first round sure helps.
Well, and they've looked really good.
Yes, they have.
That game, just quickly, with Gonzaga should be really good. The Zags have some bigs.
They do. And they play a schedule, so they're not going to be intimidated by playing Purdue. I mean, ninth straight year, and they're in the Sweet 16. Hell, they're used to this. Now, the Big 12 is underachieved. The Big 12 was supposed to be, by seeding, 9-4. They're 7-6.
Baylor got bounced.
Baylor was supposed to make the Sweet 16 as the 3 seed.
Right.
They didn't. They lost to Clemson. But I think otherwise, the teams that were supposed to still be playing today, you know, are playing today. Although Kansas, as a 4.
Yeah, Kansas let them down. I know they were a lot of reasons behind it.
Right. But obviously the big one. So the ACC is overachieved. Supposed to be 5-3. Supposed to only have two teams in the Sweet 16. They've got 4. Mark, do you know the SEC, by seeding, was supposed to be 13-4. At this point of the tournament, 13-4, with 4 teams in the Sweet 16, Tennessee, Alabama, Auburn, and Kentucky. And Auburn and Kentucky, instead of going 4-0, went 0-2. So instead of being 13-4, the SEC is 5-6 in the tournament. Florida was supposed to win. They lost. You know, Tennessee at 2, Alabama 4. They lived up to their seeding.
Would have been a little better next year because they could have counted Texas's win.
True. True. But Texas as a 7 was supposed to win and then lose, and that's what they've done.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you really want it, yeah, you've got the numbers and what have you, but really, big winners the ACC, big losers the SEC.
And the Big Ten with Oregon so close to having it be a little better for them.
Well, that's, I know. I don't want to say there's been a lot of movement in college basketball, but during the breaks when I'm going through this, I have to go, wait a minute, what conference are they in again? Okay, yeah, that's right. BYU, oh yeah, that's a Big 12 loss.
That is a Big 12 loss, that is correct.
Houston, that's two Big 12 wins for the Big 12. Got it, right. So there you go. Everything else is pretty much a wash, one up, one down, Now, I do think at this point, the committee should just have a cheat sheet next year. The Mountain West underperforms in the NCAA tournament since 2019, woefully underperforms.
But they have figured out, much the way the SEC did first, how to get teams qualified for the tournament.
Yes.
The SEC did it about a decade ago when they started looking at every year how many teams were not making the tournament. They changed the way that they scheduled.
Mm-hmm. And the Big 12's figured it out, and the Mountain West has figured it out. And the Big East is last. But they now know it. So now they're going to try to game the system.
And the Big East was the biggest loser in terms of the teams on the bubbles. Like, they favored a Mountain West over a Big East because of what you guys are talking about.
And there's talk now, one of the things that came out of the weekend is they're going to maybe revisit the net and how that is done.
Oh, you think?
Well.
No, I'm not. I agree with you.
They've said it out loud, at least.
Auburn was fifth. BYU was 12th. Both one and done.
Yeah, but, if you want to go by KenPom, Auburn was fourth there. So, and do you think Bruce Pearl is the next coach of Kentucky if he beats Yale? Seriously. I'm being drop dead serious here. That they move on from John Cal. But they can't go to Bruce Pearl. He just lost to Yale.
You're on to something there, David.
Miller and Moulton. Shane McNichol will talk more madness next.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
We are back on the Shane train with Shane McNichol of PolesterBack.com and the Action Network. Follow him on X at On the Shane Train, On the Shane Train. Did not know this about you, Shane. First off, thanks for joining us again. How the heck are you? And secondly, did not know this about you. Miller and Moulton campaigned for 15 years on the legalized sports betting platform. We're going to raise teachers, police, fire, the great roads, the whole deal. That was our thing. Well, now they've taken it from us. I did not realize that you were running for office in the future on everyone should get an extra foul in overtime. This is a campaign platform of yours, isn't it?
Yeah, I tweeted that. I think 2016, and said I was running in 2020. I'm running for president again this year. That's my only platform. It's a crazy move. You watch that Houston game; their entire starting five was nearly fouled out, and in overtime, several of them did foul out, and they were relegated to putting on in a player that almost never plays. Why not? If we have five more minutes, give everyone an extra foul. Now, if you fouled out in regulation, you're still out. You can't come in. Why not? Everyone add a sixth, double overtime. Let's add a seventh. Why not? Let's keep the best players on the floor. That's my stump speech.
All right, I'm for it. I'm all for the best players and the best teams. Since you are part of the Action Network, what was your worst beat of the weekend?
Oh, it had to have been the Oregon game. I wrote up a preview, and I wagered on Oregon plus 5.5. If you watch that game, that was a close game for more than 40 minutes. Oregon was there the whole time, and to then go out and double overtime and just absolutely run out of gas and lose by nearly 15 in double overtime rather than covering a 5.5-point spread. Certainly the worst beat of the weekend. I thought even if Creighton wins the game on the buzzer beater in regulation, the Oregon as an underdog cashes. But as Scott Van Pelt loves to say, overtime is not the friend of the underdog better, and it was not on that day.
No, it was not. I will say in the first round, the worst beat may have been the over-under on Arizona and Long Beach State with very few points being scored at the end, and the under ended up covering by a half. Has there been a trend or two that's emerged from the first week of the dance?
Yeah, it certainly would be the favorite. I mean, you look at the seeding across the 316, and it looks very chalky. But that's also true on the betting side. Double-digit favorites are having one of their best tournaments in decades. I think we've seen that with Purdue and UConn certainly taking care of business. But then kind of across the board, when there's been a big favorite, they've taken care of business for the most part. Obviously, there have been exceptions to that with Auburn and Kentucky, but for the most part, the biggest favorites have found their way to the Sweet 16 and done so oftentimes in pretty remarkable fashion.
I think Purdue and UConn have certainly been the two best teams in the tournament. If you agree with that, who's the team not named Purdue or UConn you're keeping an eye on right now that you like the way they've been playing so far?
I think Alabama. I know that defense was certainly a problem throughout the back half of the season, especially away from home. Now, none of the tournament games are going to be played in Tuscaloosa, so that's going to keep continuing to be the case. You know, that first-round game against Charleston, they gave up over like 1.1 points per possession, almost 196 points, but they scored almost 120 themselves. If that's their game plan, it's tough to rely on that, you know, against North Carolina, or even if they were to advance and play Arizona or UConn in the Final Four. Their game plan is pretty simple. We're going to go out and try to shoot 43s. Hey, if we make 20 of them, good luck. Seeing UConn blow everybody out, that's one of the only ways that I'd be scared if I was UConn, is seeing Alabama in the Final Four and just knowing a lot of it is up to chance. Now, on the flip side, Alabama can play UConn, score 100 points, and lose by 20 because that's how bad Alabama's defense has been at times. But I think we saw in that crazy game they played yesterday against Grand Canyon, there's at least some intensity turned up a little bit. I don't know if they flipped the switch, if Nate has changed something, if something about the lineups, or it's just the bright lights. But Alabama's defense has at least looked a little bit more engaged, whereas at least late in the season, sometimes they started to have a little bit of a late season delay that worried you.
Well, just from a fun standpoint, Shane, I mean, the Bama-North Carolina Sweet 16, the over-under's 173.5. I mean, right now, this is an 88-84 game, and I think it goes over that.
Yeah, I mean, over the past, months, Alabama has scored 100 points. I don't know if you've got, I think, four or five times, and allowed 100 points three or four times. So I'd almost be shocked if neither of those teams gets to 100. It's pretty crazy. A lot of it is that three-point variance. Maybe they go out and both teams shoot 35 threes and only make 8 or 9 of them, but those are two pretty good shooting teams. I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them got to 90, 95, 100 points.
Houston obviously had a scare. Duke looked really much in control. When you look at the South right now with NC State, Marquette, Duke, and Houston, who do you like the best to come out of that region?
Yeah, certainly since Houston survived there, I think you hope that's more of a blip than a real problem. I think in the same way that you look at, UConn played Northwestern, shot terribly and survived. And you say the same thing about Tennessee. They shot really poorly yesterday and survived. And it's almost like, shoot, we got that one out of our system. If I'm a Houston fan, I'm almost looking at that game like, wow, we played a game where the refs called a lot of fouls. They called everything. Half of our team almost fouled out by the time overtime was over. You know, most of our best players. And we survived. I think they're going to get a game or two where the refs let them play. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Houston win one of the two games this weekend by a significant margin because of that. And they're another team that, if they find their way to Phoenix, and if I'm UConn, that would be the other team that would scare me a little bit. Houston's just such a curveball. And the way that the game is officiated can really change things. I imagine a Houston-UConn championship game where the refs let them play, Danny Hurley's head might explode on the sideline, and the whole tone of that UConn team might shift a little bit. So that's a team that all season long has been one of the two or three best teams in the country. Survived a scare last night, but you know the old saying, survive in advance. I wouldn't be surprised to see them continue to do so.
You know, that Gonzaga team in the second half against Kansas, I mean, never mind that Gonzaga team in the first half against McNeese State. I mean, that team shows up against Purdue. I mean, you highlighted this potential matchup for us last week. I mean, Purdue-Gonzaga, that's going to be fun. A different kind of fun, but that's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listing which teams have the most size to handle Zach Eadie, Gonzaga's pretty close up there. I mean, they got four guys that go 6'8", 6'9", plus. And, like, Anton Watson kind of plays small forward for them, but he's going to get a turn on Zach Eadie once in a while, too. I mean, you just can't say enough about what Mark Few's done there. I mean, we're talking about a school, you know, across the Sweet 16, only two mid-majors left, and nobody in the world considers Gonzaga a mid-major anymore. But they should. This is a small private school up in Spokane, Washington, that has now made nine straight Sweet 16. I know that they have not won the national championship, but they've been there. They've been to the Final Four. It's remarkable that he's doing things, Mark Few, that is doing things at Gonzaga that Tom Izzo's not doing at Michigan State, Duke and Carolina, and all these. Nine straight Sweet 16 just does not happen. And it's getting to the point where getting against that happening is going to start being a problem. And now he's facing Matt Painter, has been being in March exercise himself. I mean, that is a game that I think a lot of people are going to be lumping the legacies of both coaches on that game.
Auburn or Kentucky, who blew it more?
I would lean towards Auburn. I lean towards Kentucky because I think Auburn had a tougher opponent. I mean, the Ivy League is 500 in their last 12 first-round games. I mean, that's incredible. We're talking about a conference that doesn't even really technically give out scholarships. They only have eight teams. They played like it's decades ago, and they still find a way to win that first-round game time. I think Kentucky, they got thrown a team that plays a zone. They got thrown a March hero who made eight threes, and that's not going to happen if that game gets played 100 times. I would say the most surprising thing, if you're John Calipari and God, you're on the hot seat now, the fact that Reed Sheppard just didn't show up for that game was one of the most surprising things about the first weekend to me. I mean, he everything about him presents as I'm a big-time player in the big moments. I want the ball. And at the end of that game, he was unplayable. Calipari took him off the floor. He, not only was he not making shots, he wasn't thinking right. He made some terrible passes. I don't think it's going to necessarily affect his draft stock. I think he's still a lottery pick, all that. But the fact that he just no-showed an NCAA tournament game, I mean, if you're John Calipari, and you lose your job or you're on the hot seat, I think you're staring at the fact that your most reliable player all season long completely no-showed an NCAA tournament game and sent you home.
You know, Shane, you mentioned something. Gonzaga with the nine straight Sweet 16s. When we had filled out our brackets, when we had heard the stat that they had made eight straight, and we all immediately wanted to go back and redo that lower part of the Midwest bracket again. But also, the Ivy League's put four teams in the Sweet 16 since 2010. Four different schools, too, have made the Sweet 16 since 2010. We really do need to keep that in mind next year. As you mentioned, they're 6-6 in their last 12 first-round games. They've put four teams in the Sweet 16 in the last 14 tournaments. We probably need to keep that in mind when the brackets come out next year, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. And it reminds me, the Cornell coach, Brian Earle, just took the job at William & Mary, and I mentioned Colgate's Matt Langer as a person that would potentially step up to Cornell, and someone on Twitter said, that's not a step up, that's a lateral move from the Patriot League to the Ivy League. I said, not the way the Ivy League is now. I mean, it's a league to be reckoned with at a certain point. I mean, I almost think if the Ivy League teams, Princeton and Yale and even Cornell this season, had gotten more looks against power conference teams in the non-conference, there's a conceivable way you would have at least talked yourself into one of them being a bubble team prior to the Ivy League tournament. I mean, Princeton, Yale, and Cornell were all top 75 to 80 teams in college basketball this year. I mean, that is unheard of for the Ivy League, and it's just going to continue, especially because there's such strong coaches in that league, Mitch Henderson, James Jones, and like I said, whoever Cornell hires, I mean, I think that's a hot job, because why wouldn't you want to, if you're in a low major, why not jump into this one where clearly there's a chance to be competitive in March?
If you were offered the Michigan job and the Louisville job, which job would you have taken?
Michigan, I think, because I think the Big Ten is in a better position moving forward. Certainly that's the case football-wise, but it's also the case basketball-wise, welcoming in UCLA and the USC and some of the other schools from the Pac-12. But beyond that, I think Michigan's been more successful more recently, and I think you start to wonder if, you know, in the 21st century, if Louisville's success was Rick Pitino or if it was Louisville. I think a lot of times we can conflate whether it was a coach or a program doing the things that they did. And I wonder if at this point in an ACC that's a little murky. Louisville sounds like much more of a challenge than going into Michigan, where you can snap your fingers. There's so much talent in the Detroit area and in the Chicago area nearby. I think there's a little bit more of a reputation at Michigan and a little bit more of a chance to ride those football coattails and compete at the top of the Big Ten pretty quickly.
Well, who do you hire if you're Louisville? For the record, I've been saying this for a few weeks. I go Mick Cronin, okay, because there are a few Pac-12 coaches going to the Big Ten who are not crazy about it, and I think he's one of them. I would go Mick Cronin. Who do you hire?
Interesting. I almost think there's a couple different – there's like two different pathways they could take. Like, is Louisville okay hiring kind of an upstart? Like, at a certain point, do you convince yourself, you know, Bucky McMillan from Stanford is the next big thing? You try to catch that, and if you're wrong, it's much riskier because then you stay in basketball hell for another couple of years. Or do you have to go out and find a proven person? Along that, on the proven side – it's tough because there's not a ton of coaches that seem itchy to move. If you know Jamie Dixon, I think is someone that can do better than TCU, but TCU is his alma mater. It's someone that I call, but at the end of the day, I think Louisville is in a tough spot because of how down they've been over the last 2 years, and I think they might need to turn to that mid-major guy to kind of get things restarted.
He's Shane McNichol. Okay, follow him on X on the Shane Train. All right, he does work for the Action Network, also palestraback.com, Shane McNichol. Shane, thanks for appearing on the show again. We really appreciate it. Good luck with you and your brackets the rest of the way.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Shane McNichol, Action Network, palestraback.com. You'll see him elsewhere as well.
That Oregon was a tough beat.
Yes.
You can get a buzzer beater in regulation. You can lose in overtime and still cover.
Right.
You go to double OT and you get whacked.
Well, I know we were torn because we had a few shekels on the FGCU women, and they were getting either 7.5 or 8.5, depending on where you turned and when. All right. And they're down 3 in the closing seconds. And you and I both have an affinity for the head coach in that program. And we want them to hit the shot and go to overtime and win. But the gambler in us is like, well, if they miss the shot, though, they lose by 3, but that's a cover.
Yeah, I was rooting for the 3-pointer to go in.
I was too.
My mother-in-law is looking at me, do you have to cover the women's tournament? I said, kind of, but I'm personally invested in this game, as right. I was yelling and screaming throughout as the FGCU women lose to Oklahoma. Miller and Moulton, the bonus hour on the other side. If you missed any part of the show, go to millerandmoulton.com to download it. David Sampson will be on the show tomorrow.
Sampson talking about the Ohtani presser, which is this afternoon. Also, Pat Kerwin joins us from the NFL owners meetings tomorrow on Miller and Moulton.